said. "Sides, if I goes back, I be a slave again, and I ain't never be in no slave ever no more." Polly nodded thoughtfully and stood back up. Amari picked up Tidbit, and they headed south once again. They did not stop for 2 days, moving even during the day, staying well away from the roads as they did. They saw people only in the distance. Tidbit's little legs struggled to keep up. Many times he had to be carried or cajoled into continuing the journey. There was no sign of Clay, but they never stopped looking over their shoulders.
"We should have tried to find Clay's horse," Polly said wearily one evening.
"No," Amari replied. "Better this way." One evening, bone weary and dragging through the red clay mud of still another shallow river they had to cross, they paused to search for crayfish or clams.
"I found 5,
Tidbit whispered excitedly. Even he knew to be ever vigilant and quiet. Then Polly saw him. A boy about their age, sitting on a rock overlooking the river. He was hunched over a fishing pole and did not appear to notice them. Polly motioned to Amari and Tidbit to get back into the darkness of the pine trees. Hush Puppy also silently disappeared, but just as Polly stepped backward, the boy looked up. He had dirty reddish hair, a torn shirt, and wore no shoes. He gazed at Polly without much surprise.
"Who are you?" he asked bluntly.
"I suppose I could ask you the same thing," she retorted, hands on her hips. She wanted to show him how bold and unafraid she was, but her heart quaked.
"What are you doing out here in the middle of the night?"
he countered. Polly raked her fingers through her hair and brushed a twig off her dress. She couldn't believe she was worrying about how she looked.
"Getting some fresh air.
And who goes fishing after dark?"
"I do."
"You catch anything?" she asked.
"No. Too dark," he admitted.
He looked at her closely in the moonlight.
"I never seen you round these parts before."
Polly replied saucily. "There's probably a lot you've never seen."
"What's your name?" the boy asked.
"Polly." She immediately gasped and put her hand to her mouth. She should have told him Sarah or Sally or anything other than her real name.
"So, Miss Polly, you look like you got a lot to hide. You're dirty, you look hungry, and you look lost."
"I know exactly where I am. I am speaking to a young man who does not have the good manners to be polite to a lady." She tried to speak to him with dignity, but it was hard with muddy feet. He laughed.
"My name is Nathan. I live in that little house through those trees there. We ain't got much. Just a house, a barn, some chickens, and a couple of skinny cows and pigs. But we got a little land, and it's ours, and we make do. My daddy drinks at night, so I go fishing. And you are probably right about my manners. My mama would have taught me, but she died."
He tossed a stone into the water.
"But I do know a pretty girl when I see one, even if she is muddy-footed and saucy-mouthed."
Polly was surprised to find herself blushing. Her whole face and neck felt like hot, stinging needles. She'd never felt like this before. She cleared her throat. "I must be on my way," she said, as she tried to go around the rock on which he sat.
"Do you know where you are?" he asked.
"Of course," she replied.
"Where?" he challenged her.
"I don't have to tell you anything," she said with a boldness she did not feel. She glanced nervously in the direction of the forest where Amari and Tidbit hid. He gazed at her curiously.
"You're not far from Savannah, Georgia," he paused. "Is that where you want to be?"
"Exactly," Polly said with annoyance.
"What about the others?"
he asked quietly. "What others?" Polly said, trying to bluff. "I am alone." "The slave girl, the little boy, the dog." He continued to gaze at her with a half smile. "I spotted you yesterday, and I've been following you." Polly's eyes went wide. "You've been..." "Why?" Polly asked nervously. "Do you work for Clay Derby?"
"Never heard of him," Nathan replied. "I just figure you must be runaways. But I never seen such a raggedy bunch before."
"We are on a mission of mercy," Polly began desperately. "I am mistress of..."
"Of mud?"
The boy interrupted her and laughed out loud.
"You all look like you need some mercy yourselves. You are obviously nobody's mistress. I figure an unhappy indenture. The two little Negroes are runaways for sure."
He paused and gazed at Polly long enough to make her feel uncomfortable. Then he said slowly,
"I figure that your little mission of mercy is worth a bucket of reward money."
Polly backed away from him slowly.
"You mustn't tell," she whispered, pleading. "We have come so far, and our journey has not been easy."
Nathan grinned.
"I can see that."
Then he pointed to the woods where the others were hiding.
"Tell your friends to come out. Maybe I can help."
Polly hesitated, unsure of what to do. She knew Amari and Tidbit had heard everything.
"Go on, Polly girl," Nathan said gently. "Call them. You can trust me."
Again, her father's special name for her was spouting from the mouth of a cocky young man. This time, however, she almost liked the way Nathan said it, with just a hint of Georgia twang. She opened her mouth to call the others, but before Polly could speak, Amari stepped quietly out of the darkness of the trees. She held Tidbit on her hip. Hush Puppy, hovering close, growled quietly. Nathan looked at them for a moment, then asked,
"Are you all hungry?"
Polly nodded stiffly, still uncertain. Nathan jumped down from the rock and stood face to face with the dirty, tired group.
"Look, I gotta tell you, my daddy would turn y'all in, get the reward money, and have it drunk away by Sunday next. But me, I think slavery is stupid. I figure anybody ought to be free enough to go fishing at midnight if he wants to."
He grinned again.
"It's a big country, with room enough for the Indians, for black folk to find their own place, and for pretty little white girls with dirty feet."
Polly was sure her furious blushes were evident even in the moonlight. She'd never met anyone who made her feel so fluttery. Amari coughed.
"You got food?" she asked quietly.
"Not much," Nathan replied. "Follow me."
They trailed the boy through the forest, which thinned gradually to a clearing, where a small garden and a larger field of crops could be seen. Two small buildings, a house and a barn made of rough wood and logs, stood nearby.
"I'm going to hide y'all in the barn. I do most of the work around the place, so Daddy is not likely to find you if you stay quiet."
He led them through a small door, pulled fresh hay for pallets for them, and told them he'd return in a moment. Amari looked around nervously.
"This be a trap?" she asked.
"I hope not," Polly replied. "He had an honest face."
Amari smiled at her.
"I think his face make you happy."
Polly blushed again.
"Nonsense," she said quietly.
She didn't want to admit that Amari was right. Nathan was back a few minutes later with bread, cheese, dried venison, and apples.
"This is all I could find. And my daddy is going to wonder why I got so hungry. But I'll just tell him I've been out all day hunting." Eat, he urged them.
The hungry group of travelers took the food gratefully. Tidbit even ate the apple cores and promptly fell asleep on the nearest pile of straw.
Where y'all headed?
Nathan asked the girls.
South, Amari replied.
Nathan looked confused.
Don't most runaways head north?
Amari glanced at Polly, who lowered her voice and asked Nathan,
Have you ever heard of a place called Fort Mose?
Nathan looked up in surprise. That's down in Spanish territory. Far south.
It be real? Amari asked.
Of course it's real. You've been heading toward a place that you didn't even know for sure existed?
He asked, scratching his head.
Amari always believed in it, Polly explained.
My father does some trading, much of it illegal, I'm sure. And you'd be surprised who shows up here from time to time. I've met French beaver trappers, English gun sellers, and Dutchmen who sell indentures.
Polly tensed.
Last month, Nathan continued, a Spanish priest from this place called Fort Mose came through here, trying to teach my daddy the one true faith. Daddy just laughed at the man and told him to get out. Unless a man has a plan where my daddy can make money, he's not interested.
What man say about Fort Mose? Amari asked. Streets of gold?
Streets of mud would be my guess, Nathan replied. It's a small place, but different from most. From what I can tell, it's run by Spanish soldiers and priests. Runaways are welcome and given their freedom, as long as they promise to swear allegiance to the Spanish king.
Freedom to do what? Polly asked.
Freedom to stay there, I suppose, Nathan told her. If you leave, you lose Spanish protection and are subject to the laws of the colonies.
Polly and Amari exchanged looks.
No whippings?
Amari asked, unconsciously touching her scarred back.
I would think not, Nathan said, sympathy showing on his face. How far have you come from?
Charlestown, South Carolina colony.
Nathan looked impressed. That's an awfully long walk.
He was quiet for a moment.
Can you tell me what you were running away from?
Polly thought for a moment.
A very bad situation,
was all she would say.
Do you know the woods around here quite well?
For sure, Nathan replied proudly. I know every rock and holler and tree within 100 miles. Squirrel and deer see me coming and tremble, 'cause they know they could be my dinner.
He laughed. Polly felt relaxed with this pleasant young man. She had a feeling that her father would have liked Nathan, taking him fishing and telling him tall tales. She wished she could talk to her father just one more time, ask his advice or listen to him laugh uproariously at his own jokes after dinner.
It is so very kind of you to help us, she told Nathan.
She felt herself reddening again. Nathan looked directly into her eyes. She had to look away.
I will show you the safest path through the forest after you have rested, he said. Remember to stay very quiet. My father is just plain mean.
The three travelers nodded and snuggled into the clean straw. Polly dreamed of her father for the first time since his death. His bawdy jokes, his weakness for ale, and the soft grin on his face whenever he looked at her. My princess, my Polly girl, he would say when he kissed her goodnight. She slept soundly for the first time in many days. But the next morning, she was awakened suddenly by a red-faced man who held a pitchfork in his hand. He towered over the three children.
What's this we got here in my barn? Two niggers?
and a dirty little white gal who must be poor white trash if she be sleeping with him."
Amari jumped back, pulling Tidbit behind her.
"Please, sir," Polly began to say.
Then Nathan appeared in the doorway, his face showing both agony and apology as he looked at Polly.
"What you got here, Daddy?" "You hear anything creeping around last night, boy?"
"No, sir," Nathan said. His voice cracked as he spoke.
"Didn't I tell you about locking the barn door to keep out animals? Never figured I'd have to lock out the likes of this here. Course they ain't much better than animals."
He laughed roughly.
"I'm sorry, sir. I thought it was locked."
The look on Nathan's face pleaded with Polly to understand or to forgive. Polly wasn't sure if she should believe his looks of apology or not. She looked at Nathan with great disappointment.
"Let me explain, sir," she began, trying to appease Nathan's father.
"Shut up, gal!"
the man roared. He leaned in close to Polly's face.
"Trespassers! I'll have the lot of you hanged, lest there be a reward out for you. If that be the case, I will get my money, then see you hanged."
Polly was terrified, but she continued. "There is a large reward, sir, for the return of these slaves," she said slowly. "I am in the process of bringing them to Savannah. My mother is sick, and we need the reward money." She managed to make a teardrop fall, although he could not know it came from fear rather than sorrow. The man hesitated. He looked at her closely, tightening his grip on the pitchfork.
"Do say now."
"Sir, can you help me get home to my mother?" Polly begged. "You can have the reward money. I just want to get home to my family."
"You look to me like you'd be lying, gal. If I find out you've been lying to me, I swear I'll kill you all." "Nathan," he called suddenly. "Get in here, boy."
"Yes, sir."
"Lock the barn tight this time. You hear me, son?"
"Yes, sir."
"After I eat and you feed the animals, we'll take them down to Savannah. I'm going to make me some money on this motley lot one way or another."
He strode out of the barn, tossing the key at Nathan. Nathan turned to Polly as soon as his father was out of earshot.
"You must believe me. I did not betray you."
Polly did not reply right away. She stared at him. Then, realizing they didn't have much of a choice but to trust him, she shrugged her shoulders.
"Can you get us out of here? We don't have much time."
Nathan nodded. "If you head due west, you will run into a swamp. It's not pleasant, but he's not likely to pursue you there. Hide for a day or two, then head south." Polly gave him a small smile.
"How do we get out from here?" Amari asked, bringing the subject back to the immediate problem.
"Hit me," Nathan told them.
"What?"
Polly and Amari said at the same time.
"Use the handle of the pitchfork. Knock me down. Hit me in the head. Then run for the swamp."
"I cannot hit you," Polly exclaimed.
"Give me it," Amari said, picking up the pitchfork. She looked at Nathan and smiled.
"You be good person. I hit you not with hate, but with much thank."
Nathan nodded as Amari raised the handle of the pitchfork in her hand.
"Wait!"
Polly cried. Amari lowered her arm.
"Will we ever see you again?"
she asked Nathan softly.
"Probably not. My father will beat me for sure when he figures out what happened. But remember me, will you?"
He grinned briefly, looked at Polly for a long moment, then said to Amari,
"Do it. Hurry."
Amari swung firmly. The handle struck Nathan's head with a sickening thud, and he crumpled into the straw.
"Is he dead?"
Tidbit asked. It was the first thing he had said all morning.
"No," Amari replied as she touched Nathan gently on the neck. He be fine. Let us flee. She grabbed Tidbit's hand and dashed out of the barn. Polly took one last glance at Nathan lying there, then followed them. They hurried across the field, past the sharp edges of the palmetto palms, and deep into the darkness of the woods. Amari led them, as if by instinct, it seemed to Polly, due west, far away from their usual southern route. They dared not stop, but they slowed to catch their breath. Exhaling with difficulty, Amari said softly, "Follow me." She led them quickly to an area where the ground they walked on was soft and squishy. Water oozed between their toes as they walked. "Swamp," she told them. "Snakes," Polly added, thinking of the slaves in the rice fields.
"Gators,"
Tidbit whispered fearfully. "Safety," Amari told them all. "Nobody find us here." They held hands and slowly marched into the sucking ooze. The mud, covered by a shallow layer of liquid slime, seemed to try to grab them and pull them down with each step. Deeper and deeper they ventured into the swamp. Soon the muck was to their knees. Thick mud covered their thighs, then their waists. Amari had to lift Tidbit onto her hip, as it became impossible for him to wade through it any longer. Finally, as deep into the swamp as they dared to go, under the shade of a huge mimosa tree with branches that were covered with hanging moss, they stopped. Birds called shrilly above. Something slithered past Polly's leg. She gasped, but did not cry out. They waited. The mud turned cold. Part 9. Amari. Chapter 37. Lost and found and lost. They stayed in the swamp until well after dark. No one pursued them. After listening carefully for the sound of dogs or hunters, and hearing nothing but the burping of bullfrogs, Amari signaled that they should ease out of the mire. Slowly, the children made their way to the edge of the swamp and collapsed on the relatively solid ground. Thick black mud covered them completely. It was even inside their ears.
"Nathan must have told his father we went in another direction," Polly whispered.
"He good man," Amari said in agreement.
"Amari, we gotta wash,"
Tidbit piped up as he tried to scrape the mud off of his arms. Amari smiled at the muddy boy.
"You look like little dirt ball," she teased. "But rain be washing you soon. Just wait."
The rain began about an hour later, gentle at first, then hard enough to rinse off the mud and chill the children as well. It rained all night.
"I be so tired," Amari said, shivering, as they stopped to eat some of the food Nathan had given them.
She looked at her swollen feet and her insect-bitten legs. The others looked just as weary.
"But we got to use the dock to move."
No one spoke much. Amari walked slowly and without much energy. Just before dawn, they reached the outskirts of Savannah, but they made a wide detour to avoid the populated areas. The rain finally stopped, and the warmth in the air felt wonderful.
"Do you think Nathan's father will look for us near Savannah?" Polly asked.
"You wonder about Nathan or his father," Amari responded with a small smile.
"I don't think he betrayed us," Polly replied. "He is not like his father."
"He be son of evil man," Amari told her.
But then she added, evil man be father of good man.
Polly looked thoughtful, then voiced the fear they had all been holding.
What about Clay?
She whispered. No one had an answer. As daylight approached, they looked for a place to rest for the day. Hush Puppy had a knack for finding huge overturned logs, or shallow caves, or even abandoned shacks for them each day. He'd led them this morning to a small wooden shack, not much bigger than an outhouse, hidden in a thicket of trees. Its door, dangling on one hinge, had blown open, so the earthen floor was covered with leaves and animal droppings.
It looks like it might have been a hunter shelter, Polly observed.
Amari looked carefully inside and outside the small building. It was clear that no one had been there for a long time.
Safe for now, she stated.
It was so small, the three could barely sit down together. But they were grateful for shelter and a place to sleep, even if they had to do it sitting up. They shared some of the nuts and berries and tried to sleep. Hush Puppy curled up under a tree not far away. Amari dozed, then was startled awake by the rustling of leaves and the snapping of branches. Something or someone was approaching fast, and there was no time to hide. A furious-sounding voice bellowed,
"Patrick! I know you're in there, man. You can't hide from your responsibilities out here anymore. You're as useful as a lighthouse in a bog. If you don't get home and take care of your family, I swear I'll—"
Tidbit shrieked in alarm as the door flew open and a woman, dressed amazingly all in buckskin, stared open-mouthed at the three children. Equally astonished, they stared right back. She was a large woman, with ruddy cheeks and stony blue eyes. Thick ringlets of dark hair escaped her bonnet, which also seemed to be made of buckskin.
"What is this? Who be ye? What you done with my Patrick?"
Polly spoke up.
"We have not seen anyone, ma'am."
She could not think of anything else to say. Amari and Tidbit cowered beneath the woman's gaze.
"Where you all come from?"
the woman asked suspiciously.
"Savannah, ma'am."
Amari hoped the woman couldn't sense Polly's lie.
"What you all doing in Patrick's shed?"
"Sleeping, ma'am,"
Polly answered, truthfully this time. The woman stared at them with eyes of thunder for a moment or two. Then she sat down heavily on the ground and doubled over with gales of laughter.
"Well, I'll be gobsmacked," she said between laughs.
"Sleeping, ma'am,"
she said in a tiny little voice, mimicking Polly.
"You all must be on the Aki. Runaways for sure. Am I right?"
Amari could see that Polly was unsure of what to say.
"What we got here? Two slaves and a... What be ye, gal?"
"Indentured servant, ma'am," Polly said quietly.
"Hmm,"
the woman replied.
"You ever see a pothook, lass?"
"By the hearth?"
Polly asked, confused.
"No, around your neck," the woman said. "That be the punishment round these parts for runaway indentured gals. An iron collar with hooks on it."
"Oh, please, no, ma'am," Polly pleaded.
"Please, not that."
The woman laughed again.
"You've not called to be a skirt of Fiona, child. I ain't going to turn you all in. I'm just telling you what the punishment be for runaway indentures. Punishment for runaway slaves be a lot worse now,"
she said, looking at Amari and Tidbit. Amari spoke softly.
"Who you be, ma'am?"
"Me? I am Fiona O'Reilly. My pa brought me to this place from Ireland when I was just a wee snip of a thing. About the age of that cub you be holding on to. He be yours?"
Amari started to say no, but thought better of it.
"Yes, ma'am. He be mine."
She pulled Tidbit close.
"Well, you can't stay here, none of you. My Patrick is a good man, but a hard man. A mite lazy, mind you. One who would rather be a-hunting than clearing the fields for harvest. which I guess explains my clothes. He brings me skins, and I make my own clothes. I can sew a garment from anything.
She looked down and laughed at her buckskins. Tidbit could not stop staring at the large, unusual woman.
Your man killed many deer to make that dress for you,
he said solemnly. Fiona erupted in laughter once more, smacking her large thighs with her hand as she chortled.
Little one speaks true, but there be no telling what my Patrick might do if he finds you here. For sure he won't be a-laughing.
Well, we'll just be on our way then, ma'am, Polly said, as she motioned to the others to gather their belongings to leave. We don't need any more trouble. It has been a long, hard journey.
Savannah's only half a day's walk from here, Fiona said quietly. Methinks you not speak true before.
Polly bowed her head and glanced at Amari. Her look seemed to say, trust her.
We could use some help, ma'am, Polly admitted.
Amari hoped they were doing the right thing. Fiona seemed to think for a minute, then said firmly,
You're coming with me. Be quick about you now.
She picked up the edge of her heavy skirt and hurried through the woods. Amari, Polly, and Tidbit had no choice but to follow the woman, who, in spite of her size, moved nimbly through the woods. Hush Puppy dashed after them. Fiona's home, larger than the cabin that Nathan and his father shared, sat neatly between several rows of corn and beans. Amari noticed small shacks off to the right. Slave quarters, she knew. Fiona led them to the barn, which held two wagons, three horses, and numerous pieces of farm equipment.
Climb into the back of that one and hide, she commanded, pointing to the smaller of the two wagons, until I think of what to do with you.
You keep slaves here, missus?
Amari asked meekly as Fiona bustled around the barn, muttering to herself.
Of course, child. Everybody has slaves. How do you think we handle this land? But my Patrick is a good man and does not mistreat his property. Our slaves like it here.
Amari couldn't understand how the woman could see no wrong in owning slaves as long as they were well treated.
Then why are you helping us? Polly asked.
Fiona looked at her carefully and thought a moment.
It's like this. If my Patrick brings home a new slave like he did last week, for example, that's his right as master and man of this house, and I dare not interfere. As a woman, I ain't got muckle to say about those kind of decisions. But when I got the chance to decide for myself, I find it gives me pleasure to choose to help you be free. That's the truth, and I did not know it until I spoke the words.
Fiona looked immensely pleased with herself.
Thank you,
Amari murmured, as she helped Tidbit climb into the back of the wagon.
Wait here, Fiona told them. I will send someone in here to hitch up the wagon.
She hurried out of the barn. Amari nervously looked around the barn.
She be good woman?
Amari whispered to Polly.
Yes, but she is afraid, Polly replied.
I do not think she has ever made her own decision before.
I hope her husband doesn't return soon.
The barn door opened then, and a thin, stooped black man limped over to them.
I'm to harness the wagon, he mumbled,
not even glancing at Amari or Polly. Amari jerked her head suddenly.
She knew that voice. What be your name? She asked.
Buck,
he answered slowly, as he led the large brown horse to the wagon.
They calls me Buck.
Amari knew the perfect modulation of that voice, the deep bass edged with gold. Her mind ran quickly back to the reddish dust of the road that led to Ziavi. The shrieking of the blue Turaco birds at dawn, the taste of her mother's groundnut stew. She shook her head to hold back the tears.
Are you my Bessa?
she asked in Eve. The man looked up quickly. On his face was a small faded birthmark, shaped a little like a pineapple.
Amari? He said softly.
My Besa, my love, I have found you. It is I, Amari!
Her heart thudded as she allowed all her memories to come rushing back. She jumped from the wagon and ran to him. But just as she reached him and was about to embrace him, he held his hand out and stopped her.
No, don't,
he pleaded.
Besa!
She cried with urgency. But then she saw. The Besa she had known no longer existed. His right eye was missing. His face, deeply scarred on that side, looked like old leather. Half of his teeth seemed to be missing as well.
Oh, Besa, what has happened to you?
She asked him, finally touching his arm softly.
I have had 5 Onas since I saw you last, Amari. Onas!
He spat on the ground in disgust.
To even say the word makes me hate them more.
We are alive, she said gently.
I'd rather be dead,
Besa replied bitterly, glaring at her.
You have been treated well, then?
She bowed her head.
No, I have not. I have been raped. I have been beaten. I have been made to feel like I am nothing. But I live.
My spirit is dead,
he said, his voice empty.
They beat it out of me with their whips, cut it out of me with their knives, shot it out of me with their guns. I can barely see, and every step causes me pain.
Her stomach churned as she listened to his ordeal.
Come with us, Amari cried suddenly. We have run away, all the way from Charlestown. We are heading to Fort Mose, a place where everyone can be free.
Besa looked at her as if she were crazed.
There is no such thing as freedom, Amari. I tried to escape several times. Each time I was caught by their dogs, beaten, and then sold. You will be caught as well.
We will not be caught, Amari insisted. We have already come this far. Give yourself a chance to believe once more, she pleaded. Please come with us, Besa.
Amari reached out to him again, but he jerked back. She felt her heart turn inside out.
I no longer believe in anything, Besa told her harshly.
Amari inhaled sharply.
What have they done to you?
Besa looked up at the faces of Polly and Tidbit, who were peering over the side of the wagon.
You travel with a white girl?
He asked with surprise.
First chance she gets, the white one will turn on you. Trust no one.
She is my friend,
Amari told him stiffly, realizing as she said it that it was true. She softened then.
Please, my Besa, you are my past. Come be my future as well.
No, he said with finality. I will take no more risks. I have found a woman here. A good woman. She keeps me warm at night, and she carries no dreams in her heart. She is safe.
He turned slowly from Amari and finished harnessing the horse to the wagon. She stood there in the dust, one hand reaching toward Besa, but the distance between them had become so vast that she knew she could never touch him again. Fiona returned to the barn then, full of orders.
Put fresh hay in the back of the wagon, Buck,
she commanded.
Yes'm,
he said, lapsing back into lazy English.
You're to say nothing of this to the master when he returns. You understand?
Fiona said to him.
Oh, no, ma'am. I knows how to keep my mouth shut.
Well, get on with you, then. I thank you for your help, Buck.
Bessa turned and gazed at Amari, a mask of resignation on his face. He limped slowly out of the barn. He did not look back. Polly touched Amari on her shoulder. Amari covered her face with her hands. Her shoulders heaved. She could barely contain her grief and her anger.
It's not fair, she screamed to herself. Look what they have done to him. I hate the whites. I hate them.
What is the problem, lass?
Fiona asked with concern.
You know that God prefers prayers to tears.
Amari glanced up at the large woman and shook her head ruefully.
Prayers? What good have they done?
Then she pulled herself back to the reality that faced her. It was hard to hate what the whites had done, and be thankful to Polly and this white woman in the same moment.
I be grateful for your help, ma'am, Amari managed to say. Your kindness make me much happy.
Visibly pleased, Fiona showed them the bundle she had brought from the house. The first was a pile of clothes.
My Peggy, God rest her soul, left this world 1 year past. She died of the fever. About the age of you gals she was.
She paused.
I'm sorry, ma'am, Polly said. You must miss her. We have all lost loved ones as well.
Yes, I suppose you have, Fiona replied. Well, you need fresh clothes. Those you have on are filthy and torn. Put these on.
Fiona gave the girls two simple dresses, one of blue calico and the other of brown flannel. Each dress was well worn. She had also brought bonnets, aprons, and shoes. Polly changed quickly. Amari took her time. She slowly peeled off the ragged shift she wore. Fiona gasped as she saw the ugly welts on Amari's back.
Oh, my goodness, child! What happened to your back?
Whip, ma'am, Amari said simply.
You must have been extremely disobedient, Fiona exclaimed.
Amari looked up with daggers in her eyes, but she remembered the danger they were in and struggled to make her face emotionless.
My massa thought so, ma'am, she said quietly.
Is that a brand on your back? Fiona continued.
She reached over and touched the raised and blackened letter on Amari's shoulder. Amari flinched. Full of shame, Amari wished the woman would drop the subject.
We brand our cattle, of course, but I've never bothered to check to see if any of our slaves carry brands. Is that a common practice, dearie?
Yes'm,
Amari mumbled. It was hard not to explode.
Well, there's nothing so bad that it couldn't be worse, Fiona said philosophically.
She glanced one last time at Amari's back before she slipped on the brown dress, then hurried over to Tidbit. Fiona handed him a fresh shirt and a clean pair of breeches.
What should we do now, Miss Fiona? Polly asked.
You're running north?
Fiona asked.
No, ma'am, Amari replied. South.
Why?
Fiona asked, looking perplexed.
Freedom, Amari replied. Place called Fort Mose.
That's in Spanish territory, Fiona told them. Your journey is one I would not take.
All we know be dead and gone, Amari tried to explain. Only left be hopes and dreams.
She thought sadly of Besa and angrily of their dreams. Fiona nodded.
My father brought us to this country for freedom, but he died doing it. My Patrick works hard for our freedom, and still death found us. Hope and dreams are all any of us have.
She wiped away a tear. Again, Amari wondered how a slave owner could speak so strongly about freedom.
How far to Spanish territory? Polly asked after a moment's silence.
I do not rightly know, but it's too far to walk. I'm giving you all this wagon, lass, she said to Polly.
What will your husband say? Polly asked in alarm.
I'll tell him thieves came and took it while he was out a-hunting,
Fiona replied with a laugh.
Serves him right for staying away so long. I'll tell him they took off heading north.
I know the horse is valuable, Polly added. We are very grateful.
She reached into the sack that Dr. Hoskins had given them, looked briefly at Amari as if to make sure she agreed, then offered Fiona the coins.
Thank you, ma'am. You be so kind, Amari added quietly.
Fiona quickly tucked the coins into one of her large pockets.
Big Brownie is old and about to die. Better to die on a journey than in a barn, I say. He may get you where you need to go.
Tidbit ran to her and hugged her.
You nice like my mama. Soft like my mama.
Fiona nodded and her eyes welled up.
You children get going. May the good Lord take a liking to you, but not too soon. Here's a bit of food. Oranges and biscuits and a little salt pork.
She lifted the bundle and put it beneath the wagon seat.
Thank you for everything, Miss Fiona, Polly said. Should we travel on the main road?
You drive the wagon, lass. Can you pretend to be a mistress?
Polly hesitated.
Yes, ma'am. I think I can do that.
If anyone stops you, tell them these two are your slaves. If you think there is danger, hide them under the straw.
Polly nodded.
Travel by night and follow the road south. I've never been that far, but I hear tell that it goes straight through Georgia Colony to the end of the world. Spanish territory.
They climbed into the small wagon, Polly holding the reins of the old horse, Amari sitting next to her on the seat. Tidbit sat in the back on the hay. Dusk was approaching.
May your feet bring you to where your heart is. Godspeed,
Fiona called as they waved.
Godspeed.
Amari looked back once for Besa, but he did not appear. She shed no tears. Besa was now a memory, tucked away with all the rest of the things she had lost. Hush Puppy bounded into the back of the wagon into Tidbit's arms just as they pulled onto the road. The moon shone brightly that night, and Amari decided it was lighting a path to her future. Part 10. Polly. Chapter 38. The Spanish Soldier. With the wagon, they made remarkable time. What might have taken them 3 or 4 days walking, they covered in one evening, rolling not exactly smoothly over the bumpy, rutted road, but thankfully. Old Brownie seemed to have regained a bit of his youthful energy, neighing and shaking his mane at the start of each evening's travel. Polly chuckled to herself as she remembered a horse her father had once owned. Old Fart, he had called it, because the horse had had a terrible problem with flatulence. He eventually sold it to a farmer he didn't like. One fart deserves another, her father had joked, making up funny horse stories, complete with vividly descriptive sound effects, all to amuse Polly. Her mother had frowned with mild disapproval at first, but eventually the three of them ended up laughing uproariously in front of the hearth that whole evening. Those were the times she missed. not the days of hunger or rats or sickness, but the warmth of the fire when her family laughed.
"What do you miss most about your mother, Amari?" she asked, as they rumbled down the road in the starlight. Amari was silent for a moment. Then she said, "Seem like no matter what I ask her, she always got the right answer. Sure be nice to talk to her one time." Polly nodded in understanding. "My father wasn't perfect," she admitted, "but my mother truly loved him. She would light up like a lantern when he walked into a room." She paused. "At the end, she was in severe pain, but she was so brave, never complaining, only worrying about what would happen to me." Amari pulled the reins so the horse would step around a branch on the road. "I never seen my mama scared. Never seen her not know what to do." She breathed deeply of the night air. "Even the night she'd die, she fight like a lion." "You know you're brave as well, Amari. Your mother would be proud of you," Polly said honestly. "Your belief in Fort Mose, along with your strength and courage, is what has brought us this far." Amari shook her head. "I be scared all the time," she admitted. "I never be brave as lion like my mama." Polly looked up at the sparkling night. "I think of my mother at night as we travel," she told Amari. "It helps." Amari glanced at the sky and smiled, as if the thought was comforting. "What about my mama?" Tidbit asked then. "I want to go back home."
Amari and Polly both hugged him.
"We got to find new home," Amari told him. "Your mama want you to be big boy. You know she love you, even if she can't be with you."
Tidbit seemed unconvinced. He put his thumb in his mouth and leaned against Amari. By day, they still hid as best they could, sleeping under the wagon and praying they would not be discovered. There had been no sign of Clay. Polly noticed that Amari seemed to be having trouble sleeping. One afternoon, when Amari woke with a start, covered with sweat, Polly told her quietly,
"You must think of your young man as dead, Amari. I'm so sorry."
Amari nodded her head in agreement.
"Maybe been better if I not see Besa like that." "Maybe it was a good thing," Polly suggested quietly. "Perhaps it will give you strength to go on."
"Make me feel sick inside," Amari told her. "And angry, too."
Polly traced a pattern with her finger in the dirt.
"You know, I never really knew any black people before I came to Mr. Derby's place.
I mean, everybody had slaves, of course, but I never actually thought about them. And I certainly never had a black friend before," she admitted. Amari looked away.
"Sometime I hate white people," she admitted softly. "I never hate before I be a slave."
She stretched her arms.
"I never even see white person until they attack my village. It be hard to have hate feeling and like feeling at same time."
Polly said, "I understand, Amari." Amari looked at Polly and said shyly,
"I think now I have friend with pale skin."
Polly replied quietly,
"For certain you do."
Amari looked into Polly's eyes.
"If we gets to Fort Mose, you gonna stay?"
Polly didn't answer right away.
"I don't know. I haven't thought about it deeply. I truly have no place else to go."
Amari shrugged.
I never go back to my land," she said, her voice plaintive. "But this be land of white people. Maybe you find a place for you."
"Maybe," Polly replied thoughtfully.
Amari put her head in her hands and rocked. Finally, her voice full of anguish, she revealed her concerns.
"Maybe nothing be there, Polly. Maybe it be no good place. Maybe Bess are right and we be catched. And maybe he is wrong, and you and Tidbit will be forever free," Polly said firmly. "You told Fiona that Tidbit is yours. He is your child now, Amari. He needs you to be strong."
"Maybe I not be strong enough to be a mother," Amari said doubtfully. Polly smiled and looked at the sleeping child.
"You would die for that child."
"Yes, for sure," Amari admitted. "In my village, all women be mothers to all the children."
"Maybe Tidbit belong to both of us," Amari said.
Tidbit opened his eyes and grinned.
"Tidbit belong to Tidbit," he said cheerfully.
Amari's sad mood seemed to lift as she and Polly tickled him. Even when they played and laughed, however, they did it quietly, always watchful of footsteps or danger, always fearful of the return of Clay. The land in southern Georgia lay vastly undeveloped, with fewer and fewer settlements of farmers. Amari did see in the distance, however, occasional garrisons of soldiers the farther south they traveled.
"Those soldiers make me nervous," Polly whispered to Amari, not wanting Tidbit to hear.
"Soldiers carry guns," Amari said, remembering the men who had attacked her village.
"That not be good." "Let's be extra quiet tonight," Polly suggested.
The moon hid behind the clouds, and the night shadows played tricks on Amari's imagination. She kept looking behind her. Nevertheless, they drove their little wagon carefully and slowly down the deserted path that night. It seemed to shout their location as it managed to hit every bump and hollow in the road. They traveled for several hours without saying a word when, without warning, a shadowy body appeared about 10 feet in front of them.
"Halt! Who goes there?"
the male voice called out shakily. Polly thought immediately of Clay. Perhaps he had found them once more. Amari clutched Tidbit to her, and Polly grasped her arm. She was not sure if the man had seen them.
"To get so close and then be captured?"
The voice spoke again.
"Pare! Halt, I mean. Stop, I mean. Pare!"
The footsteps moved unsteadily.
"If you mean me harm, or if you be un fantasma, a ghost, go away."
Whoever had been speaking fell silent.
"What should we do?" whispered Polly.
"Run," Amari whispered back.
"Leave the wagon."
The two girls climbed down to the road, motioning to Tidbit to jump. But Tidbit, instead of silently slipping from the wagon, shouted,
"Who be that, Amari?"
The shadowy voice on the road roared. Tidbit screamed. Polly's heart sank. She knew they were captured. But the person on the road didn't grab either of the girls. He reached out and snatched Tidbit from Amari. Tidbit protested loudly and wriggled to get free. Then the voice yelped in pain, and suddenly Tidbit was back on the ground. Amari grabbed him back close to her.
"He bit me,"
a man's voice whined. Polly relaxed a bit. It wasn't Clay's voice and, when she thought about it, not even a threatening voice. Polly headed toward